Blog Talk Radio.
My body all over your body, babe. If you want, we can roll up and pull up some Hennessy.
Such a thing, never imagined such a thing.
better than I could have ever imagined.
Good evening. Good evening, one and all. Welcome. Welcome to 15 Radio Universe Presents War Council here on the For Real Entertainment Network, sponsored by Raw Links. Why be average when you can be raw? Now, the call-in number is 319-527-6300. Press 1 to be heard. My name is Mojave. I am your burgeoning host, but I am joined by a panel of incredible egalitarian conscious community that I surround myself with, massively creative and incredibly intelligent individuals for us to discuss this community issue that we're bringing before you tonight. For the record, we will take on this particular topic, which this evening is, are you emotionally unavailable? What are the causes? You know, we're going to talk very specifically about several cases that are in the social sphere. We're going to talk about this rejected marriage proposal, too, and see if Lori Harvey is emotionally unavailable. We're going to look at men and women. We're going to look at everything. It's going to be a credible and dope discussion, as you will enjoy here on every War Council, here on the Epiphany Radio Universe of a Real Entertainment Network. We make your week lively, light, and illuminated. All right, so let's get started. Now, I'm going to bring in the coolest people on the face of the planet so that people understand exactly who we're rocking with, who we're going on, of course, as we change up and go into it. So let me just open the mics of all the good people. All the good people, of course, of course, of course. All right. Now, joining us this evening, our station manager, the man with the plan, the green-eyed bandit, as we like to call him, but you affectionately know him as one half of the Get Down, all parts of the station manager. We know him as Mr. Van Meadows. Mr. Van Meadows, are you here?
Hey, hey, what's good, Mojave? I'm here, my brother. How you feeling?
Well, I'm feeling good. I just got me, but I'm here. I just got me.
It's all right. It's all right. You're here. That's what counts.
Yeah, I know. Snuck up on me. I didn't see it coming. You know, I'm telling you, man. Ooh. Anyway, coming up next. coming next with my best friend, Billy John. Billy John. One of the Billy Johns in there. Miss Danielle Cheney, a.k.a. La Perla Negra, one half of the Love Zone, Poetic Therapy, Iron Sharpens Iron, Soul Cafe. You know, we got everybody up in here. You know, how are you, Danielle?
I'm good. Hey, hey, everybody.
All right. Now we go over here to DC. The OG, the smooth one, the living intellect. We call him Doe, the verbal mind dancer. Are you there, good sir?
Good evening, Mojave. How you feeling, brother?
What's happening, good brother? How are you?
Oh, lovely, 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 man. Enjoying the day.
It's good to have you back. I just realized that my thing is like extra low right now. I was like, yo, why is this thing so low? Hold on a second. I got to fix that.
Hey, can you hear me okay though?
No, I can hear you fine.
Okay.
Alright, and then following up, going to the great state, upstate New York, my other bestest friend in the entire world, my brother, Mr. Dawood Muhammad. Are you there, Mr. Dawood Muhammad?
Yes, sir, I am.
Alright, that's what's up. And of course, to a recent on their way transplant, moving from Virginia to the state of Alabama, our very own Miss Lisa Lips. Are you there?
Hey, baby.
What's going on?
Somewhere on 58 in the dark, but I'm on my way to Alabama.
Well, congratulations and good luck. Now, in the meantime, in between time also, anything that we're doing, we have the good and the beautiful Tiva Shao, who is rocking our event page for us, that will place everything on there. Shout out to Tiva Shao for holding us down. Y'all say what's up to Tiva Shao, because I know she doesn't like to unmute her mic, so we're going to leave her like that. So.
All right. Hey, T, what's cooking?
Sound on my background. All right. Is that better? Can y'all hear me clearly?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
All right. So let me just try this one more again. All right. Oh, that's so much better. All right. Now, now that we're all here, let's talk about... are you emotionally unavailable? Now, this topic in particular was brought up by Dawood, which I felt like at the time was actually brilliant. It actually led into all the things we had had parts of. So I'm going to let Dawood get into the discussion, like the beginning of the discussion of the are you emotionally unavailable? And then I'm going to follow up with some facts and figures, of which some I've placed on the event page, so if you're listening, please go over to the event page. But Dawood, are you ready?
Yes, I'm here.
All right.
So what, you want me to give a brief summary on the topic, Bob?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay. Peace and love, brothers and sisters. It's your brother Dawood Muhammad. We of War Council, affectionately, my brothers and sisters whom I love. We had a conversation last week that was really, really lit, and we talked about emotional unavailability, the partners that we had, and if we were ourselves. And emotional unavailability is a big epidemic in the love cycle and love circles now, because what happens is that so many of us want love and want partnerships, but we don't want to open up our hearts and our, I want to say, emotional block to let somebody in. We say that we're opening up. We say that we're letting people in. But much of the letting in is superficial. When you give somebody flowers, that is not becoming emotionally available. When you give somebody or buy somebody a gift, when you lavish praise on them, these things are the beginning of emotional availability. But it's a lot deeper than that. And I think that a lot of people try to hide behind gestures that they do. A lot of us, I should say, I'm saying people as if I've never done it. I think a lot of us hide behind gestures that we do. And then when we turn parties off and they choose somebody else, we say, well, how could they do that to us? Because I was emotionally available. And you really weren't. You didn't engage in conflict resolution. You did not really try to open up and let the person see you within reason. You didn't really try to let them, you know, dig into their spirit without being intruding and find out the intricacies of them and how you could make them better. We just do superficial things that we've seen on movies, and it ends up becoming a situation like I just did a live a couple of minutes ago called Reclaiming My Time. And what we talked about was, is all of the men and women on social media talking about men and women wasting their time. The reality of it is every relationship is a conversation that you're having with yourself. You are conversing with yourself on either what you want or what you need, and what you need to do to free yourself of this, the same toxic people that you and I are attracting. But we don't want to have that conversation. So instead, we either jump from person to person, or we get into long-term relationships with people, but we're still not emotionally available. And so this was the beginning of the topic.
Thank you very much. This is a good way to get into it. So my opening question is, have you been with someone who was emotionally unavailable? And how did you know, or what were the clues that led to it? So, you know, in work counseling, we can just jump in. Yeah,
I spoke
already,
so I'm letting everybody else.
Okay, well, y'all know I got something to say then. I've been in those kind of relationships. As I said before, because I come from an abusive background, toxic relationships was really all that I got into because that's what I knew. And when you come from an abusive background such as mine, you don't feel like you deserve to have that openness, because that's pretty much what the emotional availability is about, being open with your partner, trying to understand them, keeping communication open, all of that. And the relationship that I was in, even with my husband, I couldn't really be myself because he made me feel like I couldn't smile the way I wanted to smile if I was having a stressful day at work. He would be very combative as far as talking about, you know, it would be a push away thing because he had this machismo thing about him. And he felt like because his mother was a single parent who worked until she just couldn't walk anymore, she took care of him, did everything by herself, I should have been able to do the same thing. I should have been able to handle my family the way that she did, you know, without any kind of input or help from him, as long as he worked and he provided a certain amount for me. I've had ex-boyfriends that I just couldn't talk to, and it was actually fine with me, because, like I said, I felt like I didn't deserve for them to be able to be empathetic with what was going on with me. I've always been very intelligent, but I suppressed it because a lot of people that I was around, I felt like if I started to open my mouth and speak on what I knew, make corrections in people, which I had to work on, I was deemed stuck up, or, you know, I think I'm better than, you know, just the regular bullshit. So, but I'm going to tell you, being deprived of that emotional availability is the worst. Because you long for it, you starved of it, and it's just after a while you start to feel like that's all there is in life, even though you know it's more to it than that. But as far as I go, I've never been emotionally unavailable. I'm a very affectionate person. I'm big on talking. Those of you that know me know I'm a chatterbox. I want to communicate. I don't like to leave an argument unresolved. I want to be on an even keel, a common ground, where I can get back to us being nice to one another, being affectionate towards one another. And that's with any relationship. It could be intimate, me with a man. It could be my girlfriend, my business associates, whatever. I need to have a common ground, an even keel, where things are back to running to normal instead of somebody holding back this from me or making me feel though I have to be apprehensive about how I'm feeling about something or whatever is going on in the relationship or whatever capacity. So that's that.
Okay.
What's up?
Well, thank you, Danielle. Would anybody else like to hop in on possible the lack of emotional availability?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in.
I think
you
called
me. Go ahead, Joe.
Go ahead.
It's a tough topic because, you know, I laugh, I cry, I smile, I frown, I'm happy, I'm sad. You know, those are emotions, but emotions in relationships, I tend to freeze up a little bit. You know, I tend to hold back a little bit, just to see. You know, test the waters, as it will. I a lot of times being emotional and available, a lot of times when you open up, and then by opening up, those things that you open up with get turned against you. Later on, so I tend to stay be a little emotional unavailable because of that reason. People like to throw shit in your face. That's just my opinion.
Well, that's a good opinion. Dawood, I know you had unmuted to talk for next. So Dawood, what were you gonna say?
No, I hopefully Van can go, because I'm the one that went in the beginning. I didn't want to hog the mic.
Okay, all right. So, Van, what's your opinion on it?
I mean, I've never been in that position with someone else, because I think that when you're married to individuals, you tend to ignore the wiles of the world, if you will, and focus on what you have.
Mm-hmm.
So deception was more what it looked like to me. Now, as far as me, I would say that it's not that I'm emotionally unavailable. I do have trust issues that would keep me emotionally unavailable to an extent. So being aware of everything that's going on and everything that has happened with me, to me, for me, I make a choice of whom I choose to be emotionally available to. And that's not very many people. That list is very short. And from a relationship perspective, I have more work to do on me before I can fully be emotionally available for another individual. So in my married me didn't even think about things like this, because I was focused on making sure that everyone else was good, you know, making sure the house was good, making sure that I was being the best husband that I possibly could be and the best father I could be. So now I have to focus on me, because if I'm going to be available for someone else, then I have to make sure that I am good. And after the emotional availability test I took today, I'm not good. So,
would you like to explain that so people could get the inside joke? Because we all saw it, but they don't know that we saw it. So, could you explain the test?
Well, sure, I'd love to. So, I took the emotional availability test, and it revealed some things. Essentially, it revealed that I have trust issues. Well, I've made that clear to everybody. I definitely got trust issues. There were situations and circumstances that came about that brought that on. But even today, almost four years later, I still have those trust issues. So, and you could take that test testonmarriage.com to figure out if you're emotionally available or unavailable. But yeah, so the test revealed that I have trust issue and I need to see a therapist. For lack of better.
Wow.
So
wow.
Yeah.
So, all right. So the one follow up question I wanted to follow up behind that is, like, when you were saying that, you know, the marriage you was a different person, because it seemed in my opinion, that part of your identity was being married, being the best husband you could be, providing, doing the things. Do you feel that the role allowed you to become more emotionally available because it was the role, or do you feel like you can fill in the blanks and it was easier to basically give out your emotion according to the level or the notch of each role that you had to do?
That's exactly what it was. The latter. It's very easy for one to be able to give off their emotional availability based on the situation, right? There were times where I felt like it was okay for me to be in a safe space to be vulnerable and open to my ex-wives. However, little did I know that they would take those very things and turn them against me, whether it be in an argument, whether it be open space, social media, open space in the church. But so it's caused me and forced me to actually make myself unavailable emotionally. That's why I said that list is very short now. Very rarely will you see me open up about, you know, things that are very personal to me. There are some parts of me that I haven't told anybody just because of the ridicule or the shame based on what was given back to me for the sake of ending the marriage, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it does make sense. Yeah, you just said something. Does anybody want to comment on what he just said? Because that was deep. Lisa, it was kind of hard to hear you because you were going in and out. Like, so it was a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I'm still on the highway.
Okay, no, it's definitely cool. So here's where I'm going to go into this whole thing where Dawood had definitely covered the beginning, saying being emotionally unavailable describes someone's not open to discussing or sharing their feelings, right? And they said that somebody, they could be evasive, flaky, or hard to read, scared of intimacy, lacking emotional depth, you know. And it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. It may be you're using your emotional bandwidth to cope with your own feelings or circumstances, so you don't have enough to necessarily tune to another person. And so some of the things that they list here are they don't, you know, the signs are happening are that they don't communicate consistently. You know, if you have to, like, leave them guessing when they're going to talk to you or something like that, then they're not available to truly connect and make you feel heard. You know, so part of that is not making the other person who's your partner or the person you're communicating with feeling heard. They avoid conversations that go deeper. You know, especially when it comes to that, they avoid engaging in communication or discussions centered around commitment or even getting closer in a relationship. Someone who doesn't want to share anything truly impactful about themselves is rarely someone who wants to have a serious relationship. They feel overwhelmed or smothered by emotional intimacy. Emotionally unavailable people often masquerade being fiercely independent and self-sufficient, And this is an illusion used to avoid being vulnerable with feelings. Wanting little space in relationships can be a sign of emotional control or wherewithal. Or sometimes the excessive need for alone time in a relationship can be a reflection of discomfort, intimacy. Right? The primary drive is independence and the greatest fear is engulfment. In other words, losing themselves and another person being subsumed. They seek space and solitude to regulate their anxiety, especially during conflicts. Right? So, it also says it's possible to date with an avoidment attachment style, which means there are some insecurities that need healing. They avoid labels. They don't want to label the relationship. They also seem to want perfection. You know, they want everything to be, like, perfect in order for them to do that. So they can use your flaws as justification for ending things or not being serious with you. They can go from hot to cold. They're unclear about what they want from you. They don't compromise their time, you know. And for people who might personally be doing certain things, they think of relationships as a job. They withhold personal feelings and thoughts. You know, they want to continue seeing other people. They are only attracted to people either far away or otherwise unavailable, which permits them to have the spacing that they need to create this fantasy. And some, you know, they're naturally distrustful. They can play drama with intimacy, you know. There's a bunch of things. Cutting people off at the drop of a hat. There's so much in this. There's so many things that you can look at and be like, yo, listen, this is absolutely crazy in so many different ways of how certain people happen. And I can say that at some point, there was points I can honestly tell you that after my divorce, I really wasn't available. I really wasn't into trying to, like, I just didn't have it in me. Because I was like, if everything I'm going to do, I'm just going to constantly still get hurt. I'm going to, you know, open my heart. I'm going to wear my heart on my sleeve and someone's going to hurt me. It's going to hurt. I can't let somebody get close to me. No, I'd rather deal with you because I don't have to see you every day. I don't have to share space with you every day. Like, I know for me, one of the most difficult things was afterwards is letting someone get close enough to hear what my heart was saying. Yeah. And actually reflect upon what my actions were doing something different. And a lot of my actions were because I was hurt. And I didn't want to be close enough to be hurt again. And so I was unavailable in the sense of being able to express myself because I was afraid. And, you know, it's just fun like that. But that's just me. Anybody have any other commentary about what I just said?
Go ahead, bro.
No, I was going to say, man, the what you were saying, Mahavi, man, I was like, I was checking out, you know, like a list. I was checking off that. Yeah, that's me. Yep, that's me. That's me. I mean, shit.
You kind of shut it down, bro. There's no following that shit.
Man, I'm telling you, man. I was like, yeah, me plus a couple other things, man. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, who is emotionally available for real? For real, who is?
I'm is. You know what? I am. I have that kind of heart. I don't know how to shut it off. But what I do now is I am more reserved. I'm not so quick to. I open up, but I'm not so quick to give all of me right away.
Isn't that a part of being emotionally unavailable?
Excuse me?
Isn't that a part of being emotionally unavailable?
No, because I'm always willing to work with the person and listen to what's going on with them and deal with whatever issues that they have. I just learned to observe and learn the person more now instead of jumping head first into the relationship, which is what I used to do. I just be like, "Ooh, I like him. Okay, we'd like to just go." Now it's like, hi, my name is Danielle. Like, this, and this, and that. What do you like to do? I used to just be like, okay, it's whatever, you know. But, no, I'm not emotionally unavailable. Even though nobody likes to get hurt, nobody like that. And right after the pain, we all become withdrawn. Some of us don't even want to be bothered with humans for a minute. But when we decide to get back out there, we are a little apprehensive about who we even start to associate with again. If we haven't been associating with the same people, if it isn't people that we have been associating with when we were on our hiatus, we're very, very leery of everybody for a minute. But once you climb out of that hurt, it takes some of us longer than others to get out of it. I don't like to stay in that mindset. I just open up a little bit more. Just not completely every single thing that's going on with me. Until I'm sure that my heart is safe with you. I think I said that in the chat already. And the ways that I find out, I just start seeing how your energy is, how you respond to certain things that I want to talk to you about or do, you know, or what's going on, how you react to other people. I'm very, very observant with that now. So that's just me.
Well, what about the introverted person? Are they naturally emotionally unavailable, or is that something that falls into the criteria, being an introvert as well?
Being introverted is something that I developed when I was very, very young. I'm always going to have inhibitions that I will not release until I am just till I can feel like I can be completely naked with that person. I'm always going to be a little bit withdrawn because of the bullshit that I've been put through since I was a little girl. But I don't think, I guess I could be considered emotionally unavailable. I don't think I am. I'm just too much of a happy-go-lucky, you know. I'm willing to talk about anything. But as far as letting you into my heart, now there's a task. But,
We all are emotionally unavailable when it comes to matters in the heart. I mean, it's just, you being you and, happy-go-lucky and all that good stuff. Yeah, that's fine, but you start bringing another person in that picture, then,
mm-hmm.
I think we all become emotionally unavailable for a moment until we find
mm-hmm.
that common ground. That's a hard thing to not be.
Okay.
If you've never been hurt or never been hurt, in love and all that, maybe you're not emotionally available, but those of us who have been hurt, yeah. It's kind of hard to get around that.
Yeah. I think if I was emotionally unavailable, really, really at that point, people wouldn't find it easy to talk to me. Because I'm super empathetic and sympathetic to the energies around me and people, whatever they're dealing with. I'm just protective of my heart, but that doesn't make me emotionally unavailable.
All right. Still a tough call, though. Now, let's, you mentioned something, Mahavi, about...
Is Mahavi on mute?
I don't know. Somebody did,
can y'all hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
We can hear you now.
Yep. Okay, if you're talking, we can't hear you again.
Oh, Jesus. I'm sorry. It's my laptop is acting up. Y'all can hear me, right?
Yeah.
We can hear you now.
Okay. What I wanted to hop in and say, I think there's a difference between, because Joe, you had mentioned something about being an introvert. And so, like, I think introverts, they stay away from environments where there's a lot of people and they like to focus on themselves, but it by no means does it mean that they're not available. Like, they just don't want to be, like out in the public eye, or, you know, they don't be the center of attention. They more focus their efforts on themselves as opposed to going outward. As opposed to being outward, they focus everything inward, right? And I think that when we're talking about, like, maybe being unavailable, like, being protective is different from being unavailable. Like, unavailable means you're constantly moving the goalpost. Whereas somebody who's protective is like, before I can give this to you, I need to see, you know, if you're capable of number one, handling what I have to give you, or, you know, right, or I know that you're not coming in to do certain things to me, you know, because there are certain people, like, I remember, like, one of my lodge brothers, like, his whole thing was, like, when he would try to get women, he'd be like, yo, that's a lie I ain't told you. Like, he was, like, and he would say anything that he needed to say in order to get them to sleep with him, right? And, you know, it was very narcissistic, very misogynistic, but he literally would not, like, when he got to them and they would try to have conversations with him about the nature of their relationship, he cut them off. That's quick. And so literally whatever he was constantly and consistently emotionally unavailable for everything except for what he wanted or what he needed in that moment. And that was it. But I land my plane.
Well, you got a tough crowd tonight.
Yeah, for real. Like you can hear the brain cells frying. It's going. All right. So why don't we get into this? Why don't we just get into our main topic and let's talk about Lori Harvey and Michael P. Jordan. All right. So let's start there. So, you know, and also, Edwina is coming to the room. I've opened up her mic. Now, if you want to participate, you want to ask a question. Yep. If you want to ask a question or anything else, we have some calls on the line. Press 1. If you want to talk, let us know. We see you. You know, if you have a question or anything else, or you can hit me back channel and let me know. We'll ask a question to the panel, and we'll also do that as well. But let's begin this discussion on Lori Harvey. Now, Michael B. Jordan, right, decided to date Lori B. Harvey. Now, Lori B. Harvey had a bit of a reputation.
No, it's Lori Harvey,
you know,
it's not Lori B. Harvey.
No, I'm sorry, Lori Harvey, my bad. But Lori had a bit of a reputation, you know, for you know, having fun. She's a fun girl, you know. She wasn't commitment. She was, you know, apparently at the top of her game, you know, the only person that she basically decided to, like, really, like, throw, you know, was willing to be seen and be known as his woman was Future, who we all know that Future technically is the poster child for Mostly Unavailable, right? And so Michael B. Jordan dated her for a year, you know, took her everywhere, movie sets, everything. He did this super elaborate proposal, right? And there's a picture of all the flowers and roses, and Lori Harvey said no.
Which she had every right to.
No.
Because someone proposes
right
to you does not mean that you, but that person has to say yes, regardless of how deep the relationship was or is. Just because a person loves you and you love them, that don't mean y'all supposed to be together.
Well, you know what, Danielle, I didn't even get a chance to ask the question.
But okay, we're going to start there.
Going out there.
Oh, Palatine, don't come on, y'all.
Don't find me. You was on your Kung Fu Kenny right now. But literally, the question is, right, she probably, we don't know what her reasons are, because he never really stated why. You know, she never really stated anything in particular. We do know that that relationship is over. We do know that,
facts.
So it bears the question, right? So I'm going to ask this question before we get to the main question. If you propose to someone and they turn you down, is your relationship over?
More than likely.
It shouldn't.
Yes.
It shouldn't be, but more than likely.
Hell yes, or just yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right, hold on. Let's do this in an orderly fashion, right? So I'm gonna start with Van. If so, and I need you to tell me why. So if you propose to someone and they reject you, is your relationship over, Van?
Yes. And the reason why is because as a man, in today's times, anytime a man makes a decision that he wants to marry a woman. And he proposes, he is telling the world, he is telling her that he is ready to make a lifelong commitment to be with her and just her. So for me, if I propose and you say no, there is nowhere else our relationship can go. We've done everything else. We've been where we're going to be. The next step or the next tier in the building phase of us is to move towards the family component. And if you say no, then there's nowhere else for us to go. I'm not going to want to continue dating if I'm ready to settle down and you've alluded or seemed like you were ready to settle down. And there's a key there. You should know the person that you're asking to marry, because you should know whether or not they want to settle down before you make that decision. But for me, if you say no after you've shown me that that's ultimately what you're looking for, what you want, there's nowhere else for us to go in this relationship. It's over.
Boom. All right, so that's Van's thing. All right, we're going to go to you, Danielle. If you propose to someone and they say no, is your relationship over?
Okay, I kind of agree with Van. Being turned down, now I'm not going to propose to no man, so I'm trying to.
I knew she was going to leave with that first.
Really, did not let you talk. You know what? You ain't had a chance to pick with me all week. That's what it is, but I've been.
That's
sick.
Exactly what it is.
Okay, I'm gonna let that go. But
cat, really?
See, even a cat agrees with me.
I agree with what you're saying, Van, because there's nowhere else to go but up. If you want to continue to stay in the dating phase, which is what it is, I mean, you can commit without tying a knot, but being married to someone, yeah, you're leading towards that family dynamic. And if that's not what you want, then I really don't see a reason to continue the relationship, because I want more than just, you know, say, oh, they're seeing each other. I want the whole kit and caboodle now. There's no reason to have that space there. For somebody else to come in. Staying single, you're still single. Even though you have chosen to stay with that person and become monogamous, you're still considered single. So that means you're still on the market. You're still available. Okay, until you take on that person's last name. It's no holds bar. You're up for grabs, basically. Another single man will approach you and be like, well, if you're not married, then I'm going to shoot my load and see how it goes. And I'm going to keep trying until you show me different. you leave yourself open to be being approached and being tempted from that approach. So I agree. I mean, and it's a hurt piece. You get a person get the nerve up. Don't nobody like rejection. And then you make it a public thing too. You kidding me? Nah, I think it's over. I think it's over. And communication is going to be broken for me as well. Because I'm going to be angry, I'm going to be hurt, and I ain't going to do nothing but talk a lot of shit to you. So we're going to have to break communication for a minute, too. Ain't no, we can be friends.
Daniel?
Listen.
Daniel.
Okay, you have told me,
wait,
you
wait,
told
da,
me you
Daniel,
don't want
Daniel,
to.
Hold it, Danielle, I got to finish asking everybody the question. Are we going to put the question in the parking lot? Nah, just hold on. We're gonna come back to the question. We're going to put it in the parking lot. We got to finish asking everybody the question. All right. So hold on to the question. Don't get rid of it. We're going to come to it. But I'm going to go to Joe. Joe, if you pop the question, and the person says no, is the relationship over, and why?
For me, no, the relationship is not over because, you know, it built, the relationship built to that point where, you know, proposals was on the table. Now, if she says no, then, you know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe I can do something a little different to make a change of mind, but I'm not just going to get throw in the towel and say, hell with it. You know, she might have other reasons I might not be aware of. You know, but I'm just not gonna, you know, toss all that time and effort away just because she say no. So I don't burn bridges. I don't care what circumstances. I'll never burn bridges. You never know who you're gonna need in the future. So, you know, nah, it's not over. You know, you can still be friends tight and go out and all, whatever. I'm not going to discard that if all that time and effort was not. No. But, you know, that's pretty, you know, that was an emotional investment. And just to toss it away, you know, that's why you get those, that's why we're having this conversation now about emotional unavailability. I don't wanna go down that route. I'm gonna keep that door open. You know, maybe the marriage is, you know, not the same.
All
and
right.
I say, yeah, I'm not gonna right. toss that out, yes sir.
Man. All right, so Joe, we're gonna go from you. We go to Dawu. If you pop a question and the person says no, is your relationship over, yes or no?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. It's dead and thinking. I'm not spinning the block. If I got the courage to ask you the ultimate question and you said no, kick rocks. Goodbye. Like, no, sir, I'm sorry. And I'm so glad I'm older now that I don't care about that no more. Like, kick rocks. If I got the nerve to ask you to marry me and you said no, we was dating for a year and a half or 2 years or 3 years or whatever, man, you could go to the sea, find the smoothest, nicest rock you could kick and kick it all around the ocean because that's the end of me and you. And the thing is that means that you generally don't want to commit to me. And quite frankly, that's okay. It's okay for you to say no, but I don't have to stay around and tolerate your BS. So, nah.
Yep.
I have given that commitment to people in the past, and, you know, I'm not going to talk about whether they deserved it or not or what they did with it, but that's, like, the ultimate, man. Like, that's, you know, as a man and a woman, you're signing away your legal rights, you're signing away your financial rights, and I was willing to sacrifice that. What greater show of love is that? It's a big sacrifice and a big vulnerability. And here you go. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to say no? I'm sorry. I'm Kirk out.
Oh. Wow. All right.
Beam us up, Scotty.
Yo, all right. so I'm going to come over here to Zawina. Oh, wait, and area code 614, who am I asking speaking?
This is Wendell.
Hey, good brother. I thought it was. I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, sir. Glad
to be here. What's happening? So I'm going to come. I'm gonna come back to you in a second, Wendell. I'm gonna go to Zawina, and then I'm gonna come to you.
Right.
So, Zawina.
Yes.
If someone pops a question, or you pop a question, and they say no, is your relationship gone or no?
I understand everybody's point of perspective that they would just call it off because that person isn't ready to commit. But I look at it like it's not a marriage proposal, and a marriage is not just like some sort of a gift. It's an agreement on both people's part. So if she's not ready to meet you on that same agreement, she's not ready, maybe not in the same state of mind or, you know, ready for that kind of commitment. You don't know what her beliefs are behind marriage or why she might have some sort of reservations as to why she's not ready. Why would that have to end it if you felt like she had value enough to be considered your wife and you maybe had conversations that alluded to the fact that she, you know, if you didn't have conversations that alluded to the fact that she wanted to, why are you mad at her for not being ready? Why would you be mad that a person isn't ready for that next step in a commitment, because that means that they're likely not able to meet you on that same step as well. And that's like pointless. Look at what we're going through, what we heard about Jada and Will Smith. It's like she wasn't his first choice, so everybody believes that she went into it without actually being completely in love with him and with reservations, and now they are where they are. Whether it was worth it or not is not for us to necessarily say, but there's a lot of drawbacks to going into a marriage just because a person kind of loves you or shows you all this love and affection, and you're not in that exact state that they're in. At least that's what I think.
Okay. All right, so now we're going to come over here. We're going to come over here to Wendell, of course. Wendell, if you pop the question to someone and they turn you down, is your relationship over? You know, yes or no, and why?
Let's see. I would have to say the relationship as a whole isn't over, but it definitely will take a different direction. When I was of the mindset to be married, and when I was married last, I was always told to, when it comes to a decision like that, you never ask a question that you don't already know the answer to. So that would speak to slowing down enough to, you know, have the conversations ahead of time where there's pretty much an agreement on both sides that this is what we want to do. And then that way it takes, while there's still a romantic element to it, it doesn't rely on romanticism in order to make that decision. Because I think that, you know, if a proposal was made and it was rejected, then there was something going on there behind the scenes that was unresolved that should have been identified before the question was even asked. And then that way we can take ego more out of the picture. Because really, it's, you know, being told no is about rejection. And in the heat and in the height of that negative emotion, you know, it would only make sense to protect ego that you would say, you'd be like, okay, the relationship is over. When in all actuality, that no could simply be saying, now is not the time, and that could have been discovered with more conversation ahead of, you know, a forethought. But my hypocrisy only goes but so far, because I now that point in time has come and gone, and that decision was made, I would be a lot more critical of whether or not this person has the capacity to be a partner to me. So, you know, so I think Devil said, I'm not spinning the block. Like, yeah, I don't think that I would sign up for that potential rejection again. I would simply accept the, you know, the answer for what it is and keep moving, and then we could, you know, relate in a different type of way. We could course correct the relationship and take it from a romantic and potentially long-term committed level to something more appropriate for where we are.
Okay, so being that as it is, you know, we've all discussed and we've hit it from all many different angles of what it is. Danielle, get your question ready because I know we have it in there, and I got T. Bashal's question too. But in this opinion, how does it look for one, like, and you know, a lot of times we like to think that the people that we put into the public sphere as being heroes, being someone that we can admire for what they do and how they do things, you know, without actually knowing the nature of the relationship between the two people and the reason why they were, you know, because a lot of times people, you only see what people are willing to let you see, especially if they know that they exist, you know, as quote-unquote stars, right? So, in that sense, right, we understand that there's a particular uproar because of Michael B. Jordan being a very virile and available and very, you know, seen as one of the world's most sexiest people. For him to be rejected in the public eye, in your opinion, how do you think that people took the particular rejection of him versus what she wants? And I know Danielle has started speaking on it, but let's just run through. How do you think that, number one, he took the rejection, and how do you think the public fallout either addressed the issue or didn't address the issue surrounding the no?
You asking me now?
Yeah, I'm asking you, Danielle.
Okay, well, first of all, ain't nobody damn business how he took it, but I would assume that he took it kind of hard because he made it so public and dramatic. Rejection is hard, period, whether it's behind closed doors or whether it's made public. As far as him being rejected and being considered, quote unquote, one of the world's sexiest men or whatever it is, I'm not starstruck. He's human just like anybody else is. So, I mean, it just goes to show you with her rejecting, telling him no, that he's not exempt from being turned down, regardless of what the popular opinion is. I feel kind of bad for men that go out their way and make this a big, fantastic thing. I think it's a beautiful way of asking a woman to commit and spend the rest of their lives with them. But at the same time, shit happens. Life happens. She's not ready for whatever reason. And he just got to take it on the chin. Now, whether he continues to deal with her in the capacity that he was in that relationship is up to him. But, you know, like I said, I don't get starstruck. So, I mean, he's not exempt. He's not immune from being turned down and having his feelings hurt. He got a heart just like everybody else does. That's
it. Wow. Anyone else?
Yeah. Let me chime in on that, bro.
Go ahead.
Now, I'm trying to take it from her perspective, because him being, you know, this you know, alpha guy and all this type of stuff, maybe she don't want to deal with all the you know, the women out there that are going to come at him no matter where she married him or not. Maybe she's not ready to deal with that type of situation because, you know, guys like that, you know, movie star and all that type, you know, women throw themselves at guys like that. Does she want to deal with that? I don't think so. I think that's what her mindset is about that, you know, that proposal, whatever it was, you know, she's thinking ahead. She don't have to deal with all these women sending him shit, throwing draws or whatever. You know, I don't think she wants to deal with that. You know, they can date and all that type of stuff because it's less of an attack that she's going to see. You know, if they get married tied or not, those attacks going to be, you know, a little bit more heavy. Because she's married now, she's got a conflict deal with them, and she's going to complain to him, you know, you got this woman that this woman coming at you and all that. That's an argument just waiting to happen. So by her buying out, you know, gracefully, I suppose, I think, she wasn't ready to set herself up for that type of situation. That's my opinion of it. Anyway, I think that's why she said no. But she didn't want to deal with all that quote unquote fame type shit.
Well, that's a perspective. That's a perspective. I want to go to Zwina on this one. This next one before I come to Van. So, Zwina, what's your opinion? Hello?
I'm sorry, I was talking on mute. Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
I was running my mouth.
Okay. No, I think that, you know, if you look at both of them as just two individuals, he's, like you said, he's an eligible bachelor, and a lot of women all, like, you know, like Dan said, are starstruck by him, or they would like to be the one in Lori Harvey's position. So for her to say, I'm not ready, or I don't want him, or to turn down that opportunity that so many people are looking for, it's like people are villainizing her. And I'm like, it's better to say no than it is to go into a marriage and not be prepared or ready to commit to it. I don't really understand how, you know, but people are going to choose sides based on who they like the most, and she's actually going to be looked at as a villain because she turned down a man that everyone else likes. But she's a young woman. She's only, what, in her 20s somewhere? She may just not be ready to get married.
45.
Yeah.
She's
25. 25, yeah. I wouldn't advise a 25-year-old to get married under most circumstances. It's got to be special circumstances that you would say, go ahead and do it, when, you know, just because he is a wealthy, eligible, attractive man is interested in you, she might not be on the same page. They won't be equally yoked. They might not be, you know, 5 years from now she'll cheat on him because she wasn't ready for him. You really never know. And sometimes it's better. Rejection is sometimes protection, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Well, Van, your opinion.
Well, my opinion is, first I want to go to Joe's point. I understand where he's coming from her perspective, so to speak, but from Michael B. Jordan's perspective, she's a beautiful young woman. He's going to have to deal with the exact same thing, especially he's out acting and on the road more than she would be. She's also attractive. You know, we're all aware of women getting dick pics in their inbox. Who says she's not getting them right now? So I think that's the same coin, two sides of the same coin. As far as how he feels like any other man that is in love with a woman whom you want to spend the rest of your life with, and you propose and she says no. Hell, I wish some of mine would have said no. I wish the both of mine would have said no. But you know, I'm sure that's what he's feeling like. But in the same token, you know, she is going to be villainized because she's the one who turned down one of the world's most eligible bachelors after having dated him for however long you dated him. And who knows what she said to him to make him even want to be in a position to say, will you marry me? We don't know what that dynamic looked like. She may have led him on, to be quite honest, made him to feel like that that's what she wanted, made him feel like that she would be ready for that commitment. But at 25, come on, bro. You most especially out here dating to have fun. You know, but like I said, you don't know what she told him. Hell, I was lied to for 10 years. You don't know what she told him.
Right. So,
that's my position on it. That's my
opinion. Well, Tila Shaw proposed this question in the back channel. And I'm sorry, listeners, that you're not privy to our back channel. We wouldn't want you to know all our private thoughts anyway, because we can be some strange individuals. Anyway, Tila Shaw said, do you think insecurity ruled in his decision to propose to her? I'm going to start out and say, I'm going to say, hell motherfucking no. I don't think so. I'm with Ann. You don't know what's being said. You know, for all we know, you know, Lori Harvey might be possessed. She might be like, I possess a certain set of skills.
make that man
who can holler. Who knows? Who knows how, you know?
Hey.
But in that sense, you know, I don't know if it's insecurity, I don't know what it is. We don't, you know, some people become obsessed with making sure that like their families, like anything else is going on. Like I know, I'm like Van, like I wish I had the common sense to talk to somebody before I got leveraged into what I was doing, because I got leveraged into mine. So I would have did something different. But as far as that's concerned, you know, I don't think he was leveraged. I don't think anything else was on there. I think he earnestly felt a particular way, you know, that he wanted to do it. Because, you know, a lot of times when you hear the stories of a lot of these stars, you know, you'll find out, like, for example, that I was reading this big article on how, you know, Ron from Different Worlds and Vanessa from the Cosby Show have been partners for over 20 years, you know, and they have been together, you know, for such a long time, like straight up and down. They have children together and all this other stuff, and you would never know because they kept out the other guy. And so a lot of times with a lot of these stars, when they establish relationships, you know, depending on how they see things, they stay in their relationships for a long time or not, or they're constantly dating people, you know, or they, you know, they, you know, excuse my terminology, they're very, very free with their sexuality or their sexuality, and they just, you know, they're like bees. They pollinate flower to flower. That's the best way I can say it without, you know, saying other things. But I don't think he was insecure at all. And I honestly think that this man wakes up with drawers on his forehead every day.
Repeat her question.
The question is, Tila Shaw asked, do you think insecurity ruled his decision to propose to her?
Quite
no.
Possibly.
I don't think so. If I had what he has, and his ability, honestly, to pretty much date any woman that he wants. The only thing he may be insecure about is whether or not the panties were red or white that are on his forehead, to be quite honest. But I don't see a reason for him to be insecure unless he has some type of emotional trauma that he hasn't had the opportunity to unpack with anyone else but her.
I don't know. Anybody else want to have this? Wendell, you want to answer?
Yeah, yeah. I'll jump in on this one. You know, there's a saying that says that everything that looked good to you ain't good for you.
Say that one more time.
Everything that looks good to you ain't good for you. And so, you know, I think this is just an example of him finding that out before he puts his livelihood, his reputation, his bankroll, and all these other things that he has to lose up, you know, on the chopping block. So insecure? Nah, I don't see that as being applicable to him. I was actually looking at the lyrics to this one song by Anderson .Paak called "Suede," and in the second, I don't know if anybody's ever heard that song, but the lyric says, "My mama said don't trust these hoes, boy. Be about your loot. True story. Now, if your mama told me that, then why the fuck would I listen to you?" So you never go broke chasing riches, but you might go broke chasing every little stank ass hoe with a tongue piercing. So
preach.
So yeah, I'm not saying that she's a stank ass hoe with a tongue piercing. I would never you know, assert that about her. But I would say that he probably ended up getting the sweeter end of the deal by her saying no. And now he doesn't have to risk not only future embarrassment and, you know, financial and reputational risk, you know, but, you know, she's a beautiful woman, but, you know, there's a whole lot of beautiful 25-year-olds out there, and I'm sure that him being who he is, he'll be able to find another one.
Yes, would anyone else like to comment? Because I want to definitely deal with what you said, which I think is interesting as well. But go ahead.
Well, I'll try
anyone else?
Insecure? No, he's not insecure at all. Not at all. You know, I think, he was just ready to get married. He's a young guy, you know. He's looking to get married. Maybe, all the family was married. You know, it's a family thing. It's a tradition or something like that. You know, some guys got to be married. Maybe he's one of them types. But insecure, no. He may have asked again real quick if he wants to. Trust. If somebody's going to say yes.
He did mention he did mention that he was traditional in an interview that he did a couple years ago. He said he does not like to play around and just deal with random women. He prefers the commitment. So, and as far as insecure, you never know what's going on in the mind of somebody, but I wouldn't consider him to be, I mean, him asking her that out of an insecure thing, no. But he did make sure he made it known that he was very traditional.
Oh. Wow. Well, I think that reminds me of the Stephen Jackson thing that happened. I don't know if you ever saw that on social media with Stephen Jackson, where he basically had been with his wife for years, and then his wife had gotten this pastor who was trying to convince him to do everything. And he had told her, he said, "Listen, we're going to get married. I just need you to sign a prenup." And so
all the people that they got, because he was like, whatever we're going to try to do, we're going to try to do everything that you want to do. And he had all these people at his wedding, everything else was going down, like, and he kept, you know, asking her to sign a prenup, and, you know, up until the day of their wedding, right, she wasn't trying to sign the prenup. You know, she wasn't trying to do anything of that sort. So, you know, at the time that that happened, you know, he didn't sign the prenup. He was like, we ain't getting married. And, you know, it was like a big scandal at that time. And she was like, you know, he had spent like, I guess, close to $200,000 on the wedding. I don't know. It was something like that. It was some ridiculous figure. But you can look it up on YouTube. And he was like, basically, at that time, she was so not into trying to sign this prenup that she basically ended up ending her relationship at that spot when they got the thing, like, literally at the altar. You know, and then he was, like, in there with anything else. Like, he was in there with all his friends and the basketball stars. And he was, like, he was willing to love her and do everything else. He just wanted her, you know, to sign a prenup so he could have protection. He was, like, he wasn't worried about taking care of her or anything else. But the funny thing was, when he was telling the story, like, when he decided not to get married, she's like, and, you know, then she started crying and talking about, oh, I'll sign it. He's like, it's too late. He's like, you had all this time to get to the point of everything else. And so I say that to say this, that I think that some people, when they're in situations like that, when they're about to do certain things, they're thinking about themselves and what they could possibly gain as opposed to what actually is. And so because we won't know for years what the actual outcome is, like, technically, this could be a win-win situation for the both of them. Right. One of the things that Stephen Jackson said, that the girls that were in her bridal party, he said later on that night, you know, because his relationship was over, he said he took them down. And he said they wasn't really her friends, you know. And I think that when she said no, anybody on her side that had an idea about him was going to make a beeline towards him. And then he'll have a decision to make at that point. And anybody, and you know, she, and on her behalf, you know, she could be feeling righteous and be like, I wasn't trying to surrender or give up myself. And then that keeps that. And then anybody else is like, you know, it'll create a situation where men will make a big line for her now that she's single. And that'll happen. You know, so they could both be in a situation where, you know, they could turn it into women very easily on their behalf. You know, unless you get to the altar and then you don't want to sign a prenup because, you know, you just want the money. You be like, I'm a divorce one day. Actually, you know what? Danielle, I forgot about your question in the parking lot. Do you have any questions?
Nope. Not now.
Not now. All right. So I think we talked about this before, and Wendell, we're going to talk about one of your fraternity brothers, Emmett Smith. All right. So the other thing that I think is interesting is you have a lot of long-term people who have been married for long-term, and their wives divorce them, right? Their wives divorce them. Like with Emmett Smith's wife, right? Emmett Smith did not do anything wrong at all. He wasn't cheating. He didn't do this. They had a son. He was playing football, all kinds of stuff. And then she just decided to divorce him and just move on.
We don't know what's going on.
So what's your opinion on that?
She probably lost the wanting to be in a relationship long before she decided to divorce him. And she probably tried to hang in there as long as she possibly could, believing that things would change within her. Maybe her desire for him would come back. She might have lost a desire for him. Maybe he was just getting on her damn nerves behind closed doors. You don't know what's going on in that relationship. For whatever reason it was, I believe she was trying to hang on as long as she possibly could, and that was it. Did they say why, the reason she gave for divorcing him, or no? They just kept it out of the public. Because I'm trying to look at all aspects.
What I have here,
Now, so what I have here, right, what happened was it said that they basically separated 20, like just months after celebrating their 20-year wedding anniversary.
Wow.
They said we
brutal.
Publicly shared after much contemplation and prayer. After much contemplation and prayer.
Absolutely. It's always the Lord. Oh, the Lord told me.
Right. We will continue to move forward with love and compassion for one another as co-parents and friends. We will work together in the best interest of our children, our family, community, and businesses. All right. They have 3 children together. All right. And said, the breakup is shocking considering Pat had just written a pretty emotional love letter to Eminem for their 20-year anniversary, saying, "Hubby, I love you so dearly. I'm extremely grateful for all that we have built together and for the love that we share together."
So treacherous. So treacherous.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Divorcing someone does not mean that they don't love them anymore. It could be a number of reasons why she wanted that divorce. So, I wouldn't call hers treacherous.
Wait a minute, Vince, can I see, please?
Okay, did it come out? Maybe she was messing around on him, or it just came out she wanted a divorce. This is what I'm trying to get at. Because if she wasn't messing around, he wasn't messing around. It goes much deeper than that. There's something that was happening between both of them. And we don't know if they actually discussed this long before this divorce came about. But there's something that was happening between them that they just couldn't get back together with it. And it was over. And if whatever, it, for whatever reason, is a lot of people divorce because they don't want to be miserable, okay, whether they're fucking up or not, okay? The initiator of the divorce, she might have been fucking up, and she knew she was going to be miserable if she stayed. So she just told him, "Look, I love you with every fiber of my being, but we're not going to be happy no more. I haven't been happy. We're not going to be happy. I don't want to do that to you. You're a good man. I don't want to do this to you. So it's better if we just end it here." That's just my take. That's what I say.
Mm-hmm.
You said we're not going to be happy no more. He was happy.
How you know that?
He was happy.
How can he be happy if she wasn't?
That's what I'm saying. You don't know what the discussion was.
If he was blindsided, he was happy.
You don't know if he was blindsided. I think they could have been talking about that.
Talked already. It's my turn. Ain't that what you told me? Can't you talk?
You want to know the easiest way to figure this out?
Please continue, Dan. Please.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've been on the other end of this. I know what this looked like. 10 years? They had more invested than we had. At least she wrote him a letter saying that she loved him. But then months later, tell him that she wanted the divorce after burying her soul. Go check the social media post. You'll find one after our anniversary.
Social media, I love you.
I'm not done.
Hold on, Daria.
And I go back to my point saying that he was happy because he didn't outwardly express that he was unhappy. She was the one expressing unhappiness and wanting out, not him.
Mm-hmm.
So as a man who was happy, thought everything was fine, and was blindsided, I was happy. He was happy. So for you to say that we are not going to be happy anymore, that's from a woman's perspective.
No, that means she cares just enough.
That's from,
that she's
that's
gonna
from
make
a woman's
him
perspective,
miserable.
Danielle. You are a woman. That is a woman's perspective, your perspective. We are not going to be happy anymore.
She's not going to make him happy no more. How about that?
Okay. Bring in a token.
Oh,
so instead
well,
of her making him miserable. Okay.
But hold on, let me hop in here real quick. We got to let other people ask the question. So I'm particularly interested in hearing what Joe has to say and Zawina, but we're gonna let the ladies go first. So Zawina, what is your opinion on that?
I think being very close to this type of situation, you can be completely verbal with a person about what you're unhappy with. And if it is not one of those things, like some men think that if they are financially supportive and they, if they're cheating, they stop cheating, or whatever it is that they're doing, those three or four major big things, if they're not doing those things, they think that you should be happy in those smaller things, those things that seem smaller because they're not so grand, sometimes go by the wayside. And after 20 years of just having your voice or whatever it is that you feel unhappy about kind of swept under the rug, eventually you kind of mourn the loss of that relationship or that opportunity to have a voice in that relationship. So how is it your responsibility to still keep another person happy when you're no longer happy with the part that they're playing in your mutual happiness? You know what I mean? And just because you haven't heard a lot of things about what has been said behind the scenes until there was a divorce, you don't know exactly what was something that, who was that? I think Zora Neale Hurston said, silent about your pain. They'll kill you and say you enjoyed it. She probably spent that whole 20 years just biting her tongue and raising those kids and doing the best that she could and think, okay, at least he comes home. At least he's doing the right thing. But then after a while, you reach a point where you're like, you know what, forget that. I'm entitled to happiness in this, the grandest scheme of things as well. And if this person is not willing to meet me as much as they want to be met, then we don't have to be together. And that can be a mutual agreement that we no longer have to be together. We can still love each other and just not be in each other's space because we are not in agreement that what we're willing to do to make one another happy is still important to that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Any other comments?
Yeah. Let me do it. So, as a man who is divorced, for me, it's not that you leave, it's how you leave. Because you have, everyone has the right as autonomous beings to make decisions that they feel are going to work best for them. How you leave is going to speak volumes to the degree of personal responsibility and accountability that you have for the ending of your relationship. So I am not going to give anybody the ability to posture themselves as a victim. Like I'm so miserable in this relationship and this person doesn't make me happy or whatnot. But if you choose that you want to leave, then that is your prerogative to do so. There's a song that says, if you want to go ahead and go. One thing that I found out is one monkey don't stop no show. So
absolutely.
Own your stuff, but how you leave is going to reveal your motivation. Now, I don't know if what kind of support she is seeking in this, in her divorce or whatnot. But if you're saying that you are unhappy with a person, that means that you're unhappy with everything that comes along with being with that person. And if you're going to make the decision to cut ties from them, then that is saying that you believe that you're able to create a situation and a reality for yourself that is going to be better than what you had with them. And if that is true, then you should be willing to walk away from them and not rely on them to supplement you while you create a new existence without them. That is, of course, if the motivation for the dissolution of the marriage truly is based on one's own pursuit of happiness. Now, if she tries to, you know, Dr. Dre him, then I think that's going to speak.
Ooh.
That's going to speak more volumes.
Absolutely.
What is that? Ooh. What's because, Dr. Dre?
Absolutely.
What does that mean?
All right. So there's a theory. I'm gonna just give a quick theory because, like, there's also a trend saying that basically women who've been married to their long-term partners simply get tired, like they want to get out, take whatever they can take, and then live their lives doing the things that they want to do because they get tired too. And they said so. Basically, there was a whole article about Emmett Smith's wife, Patricia Smith. Dr. Dre's wife, and that basically, you know, like Dr. Dre's wife had these awesome, like almost crazy demands of what she wanted, like per month. Like she really wanted to not just take half, but also be provided for in every single aspect, in every way, in the terms that she was accustomed to. And some of the stuff that was just so exorbitant, it was crazy. But go ahead, Wendell, could you explain that?
Yeah. Because, you know, again, everyone makes decisions, and the decisions that we make are reflective of the value that we, you know, think that we are able to get. So, if she is divorcing him simply because she is unhappy and she wants to be able to do her own thing, and live her life the way that she wants to live it on her own terms, and it was nothing that he was doing to her that would make it, say that, you know, he's abusing her or that he's, you know, doing this or doing that to her. In other words, that she's not a victim. Because I think that a lot of times when these situations come about, there's the inherent need to paint somebody as a victim of the other person. And I think that is one of the pitfalls of the current, you know, the way that marriage is set up, is that if you can build a case against your previous spouse, then that justifies you seeking what could, you know, for all intents and purposes, be considered punitive damages in the dissolution of the relationship, especially when we're in a time such as now when men and women are supposed to be equal and be independent and think for themselves and all that other stuff. So, but in the case of, you know, Dr. Dre's ex, she wanted half and then however many millions of dollars per month in spousal support in order to maintain a lifestyle that she enjoyed while she was with him, but she wants to have that same lifestyle without him. And ergo, he needs to supplement her escape. So in the case of Emmett Smith's wife, all I'm saying is that how she leaves and what it is that she asks for or thinks that she's entitled to or whatnot as a function of, you know, of that is going to really speak louder than anything that she can post on social media about, you know, I love you so much, but we're going to go our separate ways. If he didn't ask for it, and if he didn't agree to it, and now you're going to stake this claim, then that's going to speak much louder than, you know, than any post or any words can ever speak. Money has a awesome way of revealing one's intent. That's all.
Wow. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. We have some extra callers. This is a school night. As it stands,
We do have 9 minutes to the end of the broadcast. So we're going to summarize in this in the closing of the different things when we're talking about emotional unavailability and things of that sort. And we were using these particular examples in marriage and things of the sort where people are, you know, either rejecting the idea of marriage or being married for a long time and going through the different stuff that happens with each individual when they decide to do it. One of the podcasts I listened to was they were saying that, you know, like, how do you decide after so long? And you could be tired because, you know, it could be something, you know, you don't like their toenails, you don't like the particular amount of gas that they have in the bathroom. It could be anything, right? It could be anything that makes you decide to separate from that person. But to me, when I look at a statement that says, we will work together in the best interest of our children, our family, community, and businesses, to me that sounds like a settlement. It sounds as if she already knew that she was going to go to the lawyers to get what she needed to do. And like Wendell said, live life on her terms, you know, because some people feel like, you know, they have a certain amount of beauty. It's almost like when Khalees divorced Nas, you know, she had every intention on making as much money from Nas as possible, you know, to the point where the amount of money, like I think Nas is paying her like $35,000 a month or something like that, you know. Like you're literally living off the benefit of what this person has done for you simply because you're in a relationship with them, even if you didn't earn it. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I think that some people, they were like, okay, I can cut my losses. I can go find something. And the funny thing is, like, Khalees became a chef and did all this other stuff on the farm, you know, married somebody else after that. But, you know, married somebody else after that, and I believe, I think he passed. I'm not sure if he passed or not, but, you know, that's something to look up. But the idea of, you know, some people become emotionally unavailable. Like, the funny thing is, like, she cheated on Nas, and the dude that she slept with filmed her in bed, like, and he clout chased and did all this other stuff. But, you know, to the point that it affected Nas in such a way that he did the cover of his album, Life is Good, and he was sitting, like, on a wedding dress, you know, because she made Nas get out of his comfort zone and everything else like that. So where Nas might have not been available, literally, if you listen to his music, like, I see that, like, some of the rappers that we listen to go through this particular thing. Like for example, like Jay-Z's masterpiece 444, when he talks about all the stuff that went on between him and Beyonce, you know, and he was like, I fucked up. He was like, I was fucking up. I was doing this. I was doing that. And Beyonce had her own money, so it didn't really matter. But she also went to him, and she did Lemonade, and she did her shit towards him. And they turned their pain into profit and good art. But they were willing to be transparent with their emotions, which is different as opposed where you can see everything. Where when I'm looking at the Emmitt Smith situation, like, you don't just get tired. Someone made money. Someone said, hey, this is what this is. And after a certain time, sometimes when people are learning some relationships, they stop being emotionally available to their partner. They're tired of them. I mean, that's my thing. Anybody else want to comment? Any closing thoughts, ideas, anything you want to throw before the court before we close at 11 o'clock? Because this is a 2P Radio Universal for Real Entertainment Network, sponsored by Raw Links. Don't be average. Be raw. Get your links. Be fly. Be dope.
You have
to be real. All right, so. Well, we got to, we have to pay for this stuff. We got to move these links. But that being said, any closing thoughts from everybody about tonight, about being emotionally unavailable, anybody, where we're going? The floor is open.
Awesome. awesome discussion. Thank you.
Yes, it was great to be here. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. Definitely a dynamic discussion. If you want to know if I'm emotionally unavailable or available, you got to talk to my therapist.
Therapy is important. Therapy is important. Black people don't receive therapy. It's good for you. Therapy is good for you.
Okay. It works. Trust me.
This is a good conversation. And yeah, it's a good conversation. And I would just take away from it that being emotionally available, it does not equate to being emotionally gullible.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir, listen, you can be throwing, don't be throwing grenades on the way out, man. Don't do that.
He just said,
He just slapped everybody on the ass. And now think about it. No, I'm not.
There you go. Just go on the marinade on that for a minute.
Yes. Go ahead, marinate. Look, kick your ass on up out of this room. Go ahead. No, let me stop. Joe, any last words?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that divorce thing, man. Him and his wife, you know. Hey, I know a lot of couples that been married 20 years. I myself was married 20-plus years, and we got divorced. It was the best date we ever had. We went out to breakfast right after the court. I mean, the judge was like, you know, y'all get along fine. I mean, you know, we were on different paths. And that was all to it. That was all of us to it. We were just on different paths. And it was non-contestant. You know, we left smiling. And you still smile today. You know, we communicate all the time. It was just one of those things, you know. Hey, marriage was a force. Friendship was, but marriage is not the thing for us.
You see? I can understand it.
All right. Go ahead, Adrian. Any other, you have any other closing thoughts?
I think that this was a great conversation to have, and I think I wish he could take it further to the fact that it seems like talking about Lori Harvey and Michael B. Jordan versus Emmett and his wife, the way the conversation went and the view, it just astounds me. But I think emotional availability plays a big part in that, and checking yourself is a big part of being a partner in a relationship.
All right. Anybody else? All right. So, I'm just, man, listen, I think that we all become one thing or the other at some point, depending on what we feel and how we express ourselves. What has occurred during the course of our relationships or in our lives, whether nature or nurture, those are the things that dictate to us where we're going to be at emotionally. When we decide to interact with someone, even in ourselves, you know. And so, for me in particular, let me tip this off because it's going to get super loud. For me in particular, to see how these things work, like, we're really not going to know what happened between the two of them unless somebody writes a book, and it's a be-all to tell-all. The other thing about people doing certain things, like, I feel like if you have a need to get free and you got to get free of that relationship and things are not working, then you go get free. You know, it doesn't matter when it is, you know, tomorrow's not promised to no one. Some people just simply don't get better no matter what they do. And other people actually put in the effort to try, you know, and some people, they have asked the effort when they're trying to, you know, please their partner. But more importantly, you got to be holding up to please you. And, I think that when people are mostly unavailable, it's usually because the deep recesses of hurt that they've experienced from somebody or someone else, unless they were a narcissist and malignant and they didn't give a fuck, and so it didn't matter because they're some type of emotional psychopath. But, you know, that's probably my ex. I'm sorry. That was dirty. I got to put that away. sorry, that was dirty. I put that away. I slowed down. But a lot of us, in our particular spaces of what we feel and how we feel. You know, barbecue and boogaloo. And I, unfortunately, some people get to the point where, you know, they measure people by what they can, you know, they measure people by what they can provide or do for them as opposed to how they feel when they're with that person. And I think that as we move beyond that, that idea, you know, you're not the emotionally gullible, as the good brother Wendell said, you have to be emotionally gullible. I know I was. But literally, emotional availability, unavailability is a real thing in a lot of relationships. A lot of times, you know, there are some people that just simply won't commit to you because they don't want to, regardless of the fact. I'm not saying that you have to commit to everybody, but what I am saying is that there's a bona fide difference between someone who's willing to try versus someone who never steps. So that being said, thank you to this installment for coming out to work out. I'd like to thank my panel of incredible, dope individuals. Make sure you follow them on social media. Mr. Van Meadows. Give a round of applause for Van Meadows.
Thank you.
You know, Ms. Danielle Cheney. Give a round of applause, Ms. Danielle Cheney.
Thank you.
You know, let's give it up for the OG Joe, the verbal mind dancer. Let's go.
Yes, sir.
Give him a round of applause. All right. I got you. Very good. Here we go. I got you. Can I give everybody a round of applause? Let's give it up for the... for the good brother, the eloquent one, Mr. Wendell Berry. Let's give it up.
Gratitude.
All right. Let's give it up for Ms. Edwina Simmons. Give you a round of applause. Okay. Thank you for assisting.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Bravo. All right. And let's give it up for T. LaChelle for rocking the event page for us and sharing and putting everything out there. Round of applause for Ms. T. LaChelle. Let's go.
Yay, T. LaChelle.
And one time for the illustrious CEO of our network, Mr. For Real, the poet, author Larry Maddox, of course. We're going to give him.
For real.
Javi, you muted?
Javi, what happened?
Javi.